is going on, everybody? Welcome on into the Heat Check Fantasy Podcast, powered by Number Fire. That is right here on numberfire.com. And of course, the Number Fire Podcast Network, as we are taking a look back at all that has gone down so far in week number 12 of the NFL season and letting you know what it means for NFL DFS. My name is Jim Sonnes. I am a senior writer and analyst for numberfire.com, joined here as always by Brandon Gandula. He is a senior editor and analyst for Number Fire. Brandon, happy belated Thanksgiving to you. How was your turkey day? Or I guess not turkey day for you.
Yeah, no turkey for me. And frankly, the three games on Thanksgiving were not much fun to watch. So it kind of ruined everything.
I think that the Cowboys game was fun because there were big plays. I don't know if that makes it a good game, but it was at least exciting.
No, because I didn't have enough Amari Cooper, and right. You know, the defenders just chose either not to tackle him or to fall over and let him run for 1,000 yards into the end zone.
Yeah, I benched him in a season-long league, which is good. So that was fun. I enjoyed that part. Season-long's trash, so I'm never going to tilt season-long publicly. But yeah, that was a poor decision on my part. But Sunday went a little bit better. Juju Smith-Schuster was higher owned than I thought he would be, and he popped off, which didn't help, but still, you know, an okay day. How did things go for you on Sunday?
It was a winning day overall. Not the best day, not the worst day. So I can just live another day and get ready for week 13.
You can put some extra food on the table. So life could be worse. Let's start things off here, recapping these games in just a second. But first, I forgot to remind you that we do have our iTunes contest going down. Next drawing to win Number Fire Premium is going to be one week from today will be our first drawing to let you know who wins Number Fire Premium for an entire year. Ways to enter: go to iTunes, search for the Number Fire Daily Fantasy Podcast feed, leave a comment, and rate the podcast. You are then entered to win Number Fire Premium for an entire year. So get those submissions in now. We'll draw for the winner 1 week from today and let you know who gets Number Fire Premium for an entire year. Now let's start things off on Thanksgiving with the Bears and the Lions. Brandon, no Mitchell Trubisky in this one. What did you see out of the Bears and the Lions as a result?
Yeah, a bit of a strange one to kick off Thanksgiving. Chase Daniel did lead the Bears to a win, and it sounds like Mitchell Trubisky's not a guarantee to return in week 13, which was a bit unexpected on my part. Maybe I just misread that whole situation, but Daniel was, you know, not good, but he threw 37 times for 230 yards, two touchdowns, no picks, averaged 6.22 yards per attempt, pretty well below the league average of 7.52 in that category. Had a 7.8 yard average depth of target, had 9 deep attempts. So, you know, it could have been worse overall, but no Bears pass catcher topped 49 yards from Chase Daniel. The target leaders here were Taylor Gabriel and Tariq Cohen, who had 8 apiece. Trey Burton had 7. And then Anthony Miller and Allen Robinson, generally kind of the first two places we look, had just 4. Robinson did play 88% of the snaps, according to fantasydata.com. Gabriel played 81%. Anthony Miller, just 57%. Over the past 5 games, with all the main pass catchers healthy, Gabriel leads the team with a 21.7% target market share. Anthony Miller is second at 18.2%. Tariq Cohen, 16.8%. Then Allen Robinson and Trey Burton down at 13.3%. All things considered, Miller has the best combination of red zone share and deep targets. He's got 44% of the red zone looks in that span, 31% of the deep targets. So based on that, he'd be my preference, but the low snaps make it problematic. You know, I'm most likely going to swear off the pass catchers here. Ultimately, just sort of prioritizing Taylor Gabriel if I have to pick one, because of the target share that he has had of late. In the backfield, Jordan Howard played 60% of the snaps compared to 38% for Tariq Cohen, who did get heavily utilized on his limited snaps. But over the past 5 games, Howard has 7 of the 13 total red zone opportunities. Between the two, he's playing a majority of the snaps, but I mean, still kind of just a 60-40 split, even a 45 split in favor of Howard. The Bears play at the Giants in week 13, and again, still not certain who is going to be under center for the Bears. For the Lions side of things, I mean, Matthew Stafford was bad. He's been kind of bad. Being without Marvin Jones and Kerryon Johnson certainly didn't help. They scored just 16 total points. Stafford was 28 of 38 for 236 yards, two picks, just three deep throws and one completion on those. 7.1 yard average depth of target on the full season for Stafford, just 6.7 adjusted yards per attempt, just not really getting it done. The main target getters here for the Lions were Kenny Golladay with 8, Theo Riddick and Bruce Ellington with 7, Michael Roberts with 6. In two full games without Marvin Jones, Kenny Golladay has 22 targets, which is a 30.6% share, and 75% of the team's air yards, which is just elite. Like, it's not even, it's like a video game number. Bruce Ellington has seen 16 targets in those games with a 22.2% share, just a tiny 3.4-yard average depth of target, though. And Theo Riddick has a 20% target share, played 44% of the snaps after 42% in week 11. So it seems like he's going to get capped around 45%, even if Kerryon Johnson misses more time. And then we have to look at LeGarrette Blount, who I didn't have enough exposure to on Thanksgiving, but he played just 50% of the snaps, or I guess he played 50% of the snaps, depending on how you look at Blount. He had 19 of the 23 running back carries. He had 4 of 5 carries from inside the 10. But Detroit hosts the Rams in week 13, and it's probably not going to be a LeGarrette Blount game.
No, that is not a script that is favorable for him. Let's assume here that Marvin Jones does come back. Would you still be most likely to run it back with Kenny Golladay, or do you think that the targets would be too volatile once again, as they were previously once Jones is healthy again?
Yeah, I mean, we've seen Galladay's target share, just target numbers in general, be kind of low, even without Golden Tate and before Marvin Jones returned. And it really took that Marvin Jones injury for them to force feed Kenny Golladay. So it's always hard whenever this happens, where they kind of realize that he can get it done if they feed him, versus, they didn't want to overextend him or just chose not to in that kind of limited sample with Marvin Jones and without Golden Tate. So I'd be willing to go back there. But if Marvin Jones is healthy, I might just prioritize him because he's going to be less expensive.
I think that makes sense too. What price are you willing to pay on Kenny Golladay? Let's assume that Jones does play. What price would you pay for Golladay against the Rams?
Given his, sort of top tier potential, but also like a low floor, I think I would get wary after 7,000. So I'd say 7,000.
And for this week, he is $7,300. So yeah, I think he's in play for tournaments there, but he's definitely not a cash game play, assuming that Jones does play, which sounds like there is a chance that happens. But I don't think I can go more than like a game stack tournament play.
Yeah, he's more of a tournament game stack option, like you said. I wouldn't go there in cash games at that price because we have seen his targets bottom out with Marvin Jones there.
Right. In this week's Number Fire Podcast Network FanDuel free roll, Rawrdo, R-A-W-R-D-O, won 3 months of Number Fire premium in large part thanks to Christian McCaffrey. They paired him with Saquon Barkley and Juju Smith-Schuster to get the win. In addition to the Number Fire premium, they also won a bunch of free FanDuel points to be used on entries. If you want to get into the week 13 free play and get yourself a chance at those free FanDuel points and Number Fire premium, listen to Thursday's preview podcast for the URL. Should be pretty quick in there after the injury section. So you don't have to listen too long to get that URL and get yourself entered for week number 13. Let's move on to the second Thanksgiving game. That is Washington at Dallas. And Amari Cooper, at least on paper, had a tough matchup with Josh Norman here, but the Cowboys got him off of Norman at times, and Cooper took full advantage. He had 9 total targets. One of those was deep, which turned into a touchdown. He also housed another shorter target by breaking some tackles, which is something he can certainly do. In the 4 games with Dallas, Cooper has 26% of the overall targets, 31% of the deep targets, and 33% of the red zone targets. He will still sometimes struggle in tougher matchups, which is what we saw last week, but that's true with all outside wide receivers. So I think that when Cooper is in a good matchup, he is in play for cash games. When he's in a tougher matchup, he can be a tournament option still based on what we saw against Washington. That big day for Cooper covered up another big usage day for Ezekiel Elliott. And, I mean, he's just had a massive workload recently. Zeke had 26 carries and 6 targets. Since the Cooper trade, Zeke is averaging 21 carries and 6.5 targets per game. They can run the ball more because the offense has been more efficient, and Zeke is still getting work in the passing game. On top of all that, he had 2 more red zone targets, giving him multiple red zone targets in 3 of the 4 games since Amari Cooper came over. So Zeke's floor is getting higher. His ceiling was big before, but I think the floor is inching higher because they should be involved in games longer and because the passing down work has still been there. So my view of Zeke Elliott's floor is shifting pretty dramatically in the positive sense. Michael Gallup had 6 targets. One of those was deep. He has 44% of their deep targets since Cooper got there. So he's okay for tournaments if you like the Cowboys passing offense. That's pretty much it. Dak Prescott had another rushing touchdown. He has 5 rushing touchdowns the past 6 games. He hasn't had a ton of overall rushing volume, but it has been there when it has mattered. He had a season-high 289 passing yards on 31 attempts against a good pass defense. So even though the rushing touchdowns will eventually stop, his floor is rising with the offense clicking better. So Dak, arrow up. Zeke, arrow up. Cooper, arrow up. This offense is just playing good football right now. One injury to watch for Washington is left tackle Trent Williams again. He actually had to go to the hospital here with a rib injury, but x-rays were negative. He's already playing with a surgically repaired thumb. They do need him up front, so keep tabs on Williams as the week goes along. Colt McCoy did about as well as you could expect, given his situation here. He had negative 2.1 expected points as a passer, but his success rate was actually pretty good at 51%. He's not great, and Adrian Peterson is dust with his offensive line in shambles, but McCoy playing halfway decent could allow us to use the pass catchers here. Josh Doctson led the team with 10 targets Thursday, followed by Jordan Reed with 8. With McCoy at quarterback, Doctson leads with 15 of 48 targets, which is 31%. That's not bad. Reed has 23%, and then Trey Quinn is next up at 15%, so more concentrated usage, funneling stuff towards Doctson and Reed. And McCoy has also gone deep much more often than Alex Smith did. He has done so on 20% of his attempts so far. Doctson has 5 of those 10 deep targets. I'm inclined to buy Doctson going forward. I think he can do the same with Jordan Reed unless his price goes back up or his ownership stays high. But the usage does seem to be better than it was earlier in the year. Brandon, I think there's not a ton to discuss with Dallas. Let's talk about Washington here. I am kind of digging Josh Doctson. We've also seen that bite us in the past. Are you willing to trust this guy now with Colt McCoy at quarterback?
Yeah, he's been running a lot of routes, kind of leading the team for most of the year at this point. He plays a lot of snaps, and if he's going to, you know, finally channel that into some targets, we know that he can get targeted deep, but also in their end zone near the goal line. So I think that by far he is the best way to get exposure to this offense. And he does get a nice matchup against the Eagles next week, but it is off the main slate on Monday night.
So Thursday to Monday games, and then also the Monday night single game. Josh Doctson time, baby. Let's move on here to the Falcons and Saints. Disappointing game, I think, Brandon. I think it's fair to say. But Austin Carr, touchdown machine, cannot be stopped. Just he's a juggernaut, man.
Yeah, this is a, I don't know, this is a strange game. No Tre'Quan Smith in this one for the Saints. And what that meant was that they, you know, just threw all their touchdowns to the most random guys on the roster. Starting with
the best players on the roster, Brandon.
I mean, Lee Lewis scored first. Austin Carr scored. Dan Arnold, Keith Kirkwood. And they accounted for all 4 of Drew Brees' passing touchdowns. You know, overall, Brees threw just 22 times. Had 171 yards in a game that really had a slow first half and then, you know, positive script in the second half for the Saints. Dan Arnold and Michael Thomas had 6 targets each to lead the team. Keith Kirkwood had 3 targets to make him the only other Saint with more than 2. Not really sure what you do with any of that information, but Michael Thomas has a 29.8% target share since the week six bye, which works out to 8 targets per game, and one of the league's best, if not the best, passing offense. Other than Traquan Smith at 6.5 targets per game in that span, no other Saint has more than 4 since the bye. Kirkwood played 53% of the snaps. Lewis played 49%. Carr, 32%, and Arnold, 21%. So even if Smith were to miss extended time, I don't think that any of these receivers or pass catchers really stand out as a clear beneficiary. In the backfield, Alvin Kamara won the snap battle with Mark Ingram at 65% to 47%. Kamara had 14 carries. Ingram had 11. Ingram, oddly though, had 2 targets. Kamara had just 1, but we've seen closer to a 60-40 split in snap rate with both of these backs healthy. And when the game hasn't been a total blowout, Kamara is actually kind of the guy near the goal line. He has 9 rushes, 4 touchdowns from inside the 10 over the past 5 games. Ingram has 8 carries and 1 touchdown in that span. They are 7.5-point favorites over the Cowboys in Dallas next week. I think that we can be back in on Breeze, Kamara, Michael Thomas, maybe some Ingram, but these tertiary options are kind of not really showing me enough to buy in. Unless, of course, you're playing the single game slate, then you kind of have to. For Atlanta, pretty rough game overall. They had some costly turnovers in Saints territory. Overall, Matt Ryan was forced to throw 47 times. 377 yards for him, 2 touchdowns. So the target totals were inflated, especially because he threw deep, 9 times, which not a whole lot based on the 47 attempts, but not too far off the league average. Julio Jones had 14 targets overall, 147 yards, no touchdowns, 3 of the 9 deep targets, and 3 of the 8 red zone targets. So that's definitely noteworthy. In 4 post-bye games, Jones has 26% of the team's targets, 57% of the deep targets, 48% of the air yards, 20% of the red zone targets. So he's just elite. He's got 96 or more yards in all but 2 games. He's got 6 straight games with 107 yards or more receiving. You just take whatever he gives you if you can afford him in your lineups. Calvin Ridley had 13 targets and 1 of the 2 touchdowns. Other than Jones and Ridley, no Falcon had more than 5 targets in this game. Ridley is up to an 18.3% post-bye target share. His in-game target totals, 9, 5, 4, and 13 for 71, 37, 32, and 93 yards. So pretty up and down. And he was still out-snapped by Mohamed Sanu, 81% to 74%. And Sanu actually got peppered early, but ended up with just 4 targets. In the backfield here, Tevin Coleman played just 50% of the snaps, but still has played at least half the snaps in every game but 1 this year. He had 4 targets and a touchdown, giving him 4.8 targets per game in 4 post-bye contests. A solid 11.2% target share. Coleman's never the best play, but he's kind of always in the mix. Given his team's offense, his role as a primary back, his ability to get targets. But the Falcons do host the Ravens in week 13. So we get an elite offense at home against one of the league's best defenses.
That should be pretty fun to watch. So we'll see what goes down in that one. I want to go back to the New Orleans Saints. I think with this game from Alvin Kamara, what I'm doing is keeping his ceiling the same because we know what he can do when he gets touches. But I want to adjust his floor down because if they blow a team out and he's not involved early in those touchdowns, he's not going to score. So I think that's what I'm doing with Kamara is adjusting his floor down while keeping his ceiling the same. Would you rather, Brandon, let's say both the Giants and the Saints are at home and they're facing Cincinnati. Would you rather Alvin Kamara or Saquon Barkley?
Just Saquon all the time.
Alvin Kamara or Christian McCaffrey?
Probably McCaffrey there.
Alvin just Kamara or healthy Melvin Gordon?
Healthy Melvin Gordon.
Alvin Kamara or Peyton Barber?
Never Peyton Barber.
So we found the line.
Yeah, I'm not that worried about Kamara, but I do understand he's not as much of a slam dunk cash game play because of what we've seen lately.
I think that's the correct takeaway. Not a slam dunk cash game play. The floor is lower than those other guys, but his ceiling is just as high as them, if not higher. Let's move on here to the true story of the main slate, Brandon. That is Baker Mayfield being the best quarterback of all time. He threw 4 touchdowns on 26 attempts because, again, he is the best player in NFL history. We've now seen a 3-game sample on Mayfield with Freddie Kitchens as his offense coordinator. Baker is averaging 0.52 net expected points per dropback with a 61% success rate. Now, for context, because those numbers are gobbledygook in a vacuum, but Drew Brees leads the league in both those numbers, but Baker's marks the past 3 games are better than Brees' full season numbers. He's been stupid good. He's had good matchups for sure, but they don't have a ton of terrible matchups the rest of the way, so there's a lot to like about Baker, and his efficiency also ups the appeal in Nick Chubb. Chubb had 28 carries and 3 targets here. The 3 targets are not great, but there were 2 of them in the red zone, including a sick touchdown catch. Chubb played 72% of the snaps, which is his second highest mark of the year. His highest was in their game before this, before their bye week. Chubb will get work when they're ahead, and that will happen more often with how well Baker is playing. Plus, I think the passing game usage is better for Chubb than the perception, so we can feel pretty good about him in most scripts going forward. Targets were pretty widely spread, and it is killing Jarvis Landry. He, David Njoku, and Antonio Callaway each had 5 targets. Callaway had 3 deep targets. Rashard Higgins had 2, and Njoku had 1. Landry did not have any. Landry was also shut out in the red zone, where Callaway got 2 targets, and Njoku had 1. And Jarvis played just 61% of the snaps, compared to Callaway at 59% and Rashad Perriman at 55%. So the snap rate for Landry has been down the past 2 weeks, and I think that's not a coincidence that it's come when they've been in positive scripts. So if they get out front, Jarvis Landry's snap rate will go down. Landry's been inefficient as a receiver all year. Now the volume is down with 7 or fewer targets in each game under Freddie Kitchens. And Njoku's probably the best target in this passing game due to the position he fills, and Callaway may actually be the preferred receiver until his price comes up. He's a really tough guy to figure out right now. On the Bengals side, Andy Dalton left with a finger injury, but the x-rays were negative. He is supposed to get more tests, so we'll find out more about that. Without Dalton, Jeff Driscoll had 1.11 net expected points on 30 dropbacks. That was actually worse than what Dalton was doing before the injury. I think that Dalton carries this negative connotation, but he's not bad when everyone's healthy. Even with A.J. Green potentially back next week, it would be an obvious downgrade for the entire offense if Dalton were to miss time. With center Billy Price healthy, Joe Mixon looked pretty good here. He had 14 carries and 7 targets, turned that into .155, 155 yards in scrimmage. The 7 targets tied a season high, and 2 of those were in the red zone. 4 of the targets came with Driscoll at quarterbacks. Maybe that plays a factor here, but still, Mixon played 72% of the snaps with Gio Bernard at 31%. I think Mixon's a pretty good buy if Dalton is fine and if A.J. Green does come back. Tyler Boyd, nice bounce back here. He had 8 targets with 2 of those being deep. He's had at least 65 receiving yards in each game without A.J. Green and had 19 targets the past 2 games. He may be better than we perceived him to be with Green out, and that would that A.J. Green coming back would increase the touchdown expectation, but Boyd seems like he's a better play than we thought he was with A.J. Green out. If Green does miss more time, then we can feel decent about John Ross. Ross had 7 targets. He had at least 6, or has at least 6 in each game without Green. He also has at least 3 deep targets in each of those games and has gotten looks near the goal line. If Green does play, don't use Ross. If he does, you should use Ross. Pretty easy flow chart there, I think, based on the usage we have seen from John Ross recently. Brandon, I want to go back to the Browns here. They are on the road facing Houston next week. Really good rush defense, really good defensive line. Can you trust Nick Chubb in that matchup?
Trust, I'm not sure. I'm actually kind of worried, too, because their pass defense for Houston has been trending up a lot of late. And, I mean, you kind of open up the rushing lanes by throwing the ball, and that's a bit problematic. But I mean, just the workload for Chubb is so nice. I guess it's going to come down to price. And, you know, it's early on Monday. I haven't fully looked at every option, but it is a 13-game slate, main slate next week. So I think Chubb would have to be kind of the right price. And if you're going to ask me what price I would pay for Nick Chubb, I would say probably like 78.
He is 77. I think that's fair. That's what I would say.
I think that's pushing my limit on a pretty full slate, but I do have to, you know, kind of take a look at what other backs are there to pick from.
I would say that it doesn't exclude him from my consideration at that price.
Sure, but I'm not eager to buy him.
Yeah, I mean, I think that it's appropriate is what I would say. How low does Jarvis Landry's price have to be for you to use him?
2,000.
Well, he's 5,500, so he's more expensive than that. He's actually the same price as Callaway, and I don't think that's crazy. So yeah. I don't know. I might just – like, Callaway's getting the higher leverage targets. He's playing better than he was before. I might just wind up on Callaway, honestly, but I think that I'd rather just avoid altogether.
Yeah, I'm not – it's a very full slate. I don't think that there's enough to make us want to play Jarvis Landry other than the price, and I don't like to play players based solely on their price.
Exactly. So let's move on here to the Seahawks and the Panthers. Brandon, pretty fun game, and Christian McCaffrey just going stupid again.
Yep. We've just seen that a lot from McCaffrey of late. It wasn't enough to get the Panthers a win, but we have to start this game with Christian McCaffrey. Without Devin Funchess here, just even more of the offense flowed through McCaffrey, who had 17 carries for 125 yards and a touchdown, as well as 11 catches for 112 yards and a touchdown. So 28 total touches for 237 yards. Two scores working out to be 41.2 FanDuel points. He has now gone over 30 fantasy points in three of his past four games. You just play the guy. He plays almost every single snap. And he can do anything out of the backfield or on the ground, and he's been more involved near the goal line as well. Cam Newton threw 30 times overall for 256 yards, also ran 8 times for 63 yards. He has now scored at least 15.7 fantasy points in every single game, at least 18 in all but one. Just the floor here is so, so high for Cam Newton. The only pass catcher, though, other than McCaffrey with more than 4 targets was DJ Moore, who caught 8 of 9 for 91 yards. Moore played 92% of the snaps, the same number as Curtis Samuel, to tie for the team lead. Moore has a 20.7% target share over the past 5 games, 6.0 per game. Even with Torrey Smith back in the fold, DJ Moore, of course, Devin Funchess was out, but DJ Moore pushed for the team lead in snaps, which is very promising and frankly pushes him more and more toward cash game viability for me. Greg Olsen had 4 targets, 2 of the 9 red zone targets. He's got a 16% target share and 20% of the red zone targets since he returned in week 6, you know, at Tampa Bay in week 13. They're kind of all in play for me. Olsen's generally overpriced, but with his red zone work and the point expectation here for the Carolina, certainly can't fault anyone who wants to play Greg Olsen in that game. For the Seahawks, it felt kind of like a prototypical Seattle game. Russell Wilson threw 31 times, so not a lot, for 339 yards, 2 touchdowns, threw deep 7 times on those 31 attempts for 160 yards on deep throws alone. Doug Baldwin led the team with 7 targets, but had just 39 yards on his 5 catches, had 2 deep targets in there. Tyler Lockett and David Moore both got over 100 yards on 5 targets apiece. Each of them scored as well. In 5 post-bye games, Baldwin leads with a 22.1% target share. David Moore's close behind at 20.6%. Tyler Lockett is third at 16.8%. It's actually David Moore, though, who has 12 of the 30 deep throws, a 40% share compared to 7 for Lockett, so about 32%. And just 5 for Doug Baldwin, so below 17%. Moore also has 5 of the 25 red zone targets, so 20% for him, compared to 6 for Baldwin and 2 for Tyler Lockett in that span. So kind of all things considered, David Moore has the best post-bye workload here for the Seahawks. In the backfield, Chris Carson had 16 of 24 running back carries. He has had 61.5% of the running back carries the past 2 games while healthy. just 33% of the red zone work. He played 41.4% of the snaps in week 11 and 51.6% in week 12. Versus the 49ers next week, they opened up as a 10-point favorite. You know, Carson could be pushing for cash game viability as well, but I still don't love his snap rate from what I've seen lately. Maybe he's a little bit more banged up than I realize.
It's also hard for me to trust a guy with his passing game usage and cash. So I'd have a hard time there. I want to talk about DJ Moore, though. I think we both agree Christian McCaffrey, stupid good. What's an appropriate price for DJ Moore based on the workload he has had? I think he's performed well enough where I can use him even with Funchess, if Funchess comes back and with Torrey Smith healthy. But what's an appropriate price for you based on his usage?
Appropriate. I always try to, you know, sort of bake in the fact that he plays for the Panthers and they're generally a low volume pass offense. And, you know, that could lead to some dud games. But realistically, I would say probably like 68 too much.
That's higher than I would go, but he's 60,
it's higher than I would.
He's $6,400. So like, it doesn't matter. Like that's still lower than I thought it would be.
Or I wouldn't want to,
I think that's a fine price.
I wouldn't want to pay $6,800. Sorry.
No, true. But I think that 64 is totally like fair. Same for you.
Yeah.
Okay. And they're facing Tampa Bay next week. That is a second game in a divisional matchup, but Tampa Bay, believe has had some injuries since the last time they faced each other, especially a linebacker. So McCaffrey, like, he's $8,800, and I don't think that's high enough, honestly.
Yeah, that's probably too cheap.
Cool. Let's do it again. Let's just keep on jamming him in. It is Cyber Monday today, and NumberFire is getting in on the action with a deal for all HeatCheck listeners. Through midnight on Monday, all new users can upgrade to NumberFire Premium for only $5. Just use the promo code TOUCHDOWN at checkout and get access to award-winning DFS tools, premium content, and gambling picks across the NFL, NBA, NHL, college basketball, and college football. For more information, visit numberfire.com/premium. That is promo code TOUCHDOWN, numberfire.com/premium. Try it out for a month for only $5 today. Let's move on here to the Jags and the Bills. Some feistiness in this one. Josh Allen, John with Jalen Ramsey, had a fight with Leonard Fournette getting tossed. Carlos Hyde threw some punches but didn't get tossed. Interesting game. For sure. But Josh Allen did make his return for the Bills, and he played pretty well. They just didn't really let him off the leash, which is frustrating. He threw 19 times. He had a 4.38 expected points on those throws and had a couple of really impressive chucks. But it's very clear that they want him to throw as rarely as possible. He has thrown fewer than 20 pass attempts in 3 of his 6 starts this year. He can still have fantasy value because he ran 13 times for 99 yards and a score. I'm not inclined to use him because they will shut him down if they get a lead, but he's not abysmal. And I think that Allen is a clear upgrade for this offense. It's just that for whatever reason, the coaching staff doesn't want to see what he can do, and I don't understand it. The other thing to discuss here is the Jags defense. They seem to quit early on in this game. At this point in the year, you're going to have teams who have just given up. So we should likely be a bit more interested in teams facing the Jaguars than we usually would be, and they are facing, I believe, the Colts next week. So arrows up for Andrew Luck there. LeSean McCoy got 17 carries in the win, but it came with just one target and 53 yards from scrimmage. McCoy's been awful this year outside of the Jets game. His success rate is just 34%. You can take tourney stabs, but his big games are going to be pretty hard to predict. Robert Foster was starting to look interesting because he's a burner. He had a huge deep catch, but he got banged up. He'd be a name to monitor if he winds up being okay. He is doubling Kelvin Benjamin's snap rate right now, basically. The problem is that nobody here had more than 3 targets, and they clearly don't want Allen to throw. Foster is the guy I'd watch most closely, but I'm not using him yet. Leonard Fournette got ejected, but before that, he got in a lot of work again. He had 18 carries and 3 targets, cashing in for a pair of touchdowns. He might have had a third if he hadn't been ejected because the ball was on the half-yard line there. Again, it's not going to be efficient. They lost another offensive lineman, Andrew Norwell, who is very good in this game. And they could be without their 3 best offensive linemen if Norwell does miss time. But the volume is going to be there for Fournette. Fournette is in play every week just based on volume, even with how bad this offense is. Blake Bortles threw just 23 times, so nobody got volume in the passing game either. They're another team that actively does not want its quarterback to throw. If you decide to go at the receivers, I would put D.D. Westbrook a hair over Dante Moncrief, but just I would save yourself the trouble here. The problem is they're facing the Colts at home, and the Jags play better at home. So, Brandon, even with the offensive line banged up, how do you feel about Leonard Fournette at home against the Colts?
Fine. I don't want to get ahead of myself. The snap rate's never super high, but I mean, his usage rate, if you look at touches per snaps, which you can find on fantasydata.com, Fournette's at 69.8. Nice. I know. Sony Michel's at 71.1. And then, Chris Carson is third on the list among qualified backs at 57%. So basically, you know, the snap rate's never what I want from Fournette, but he just gets touches every single time he's on the field, basically.
That's not an exaggeration either.
Yeah, it's almost, 70% of his snaps he's getting a touch, which is just absurd. So I don't love the thought of playing Fournette in what could be a negative game script, though, and that's my big concern with overpaying for kind of a one-dimensional back, although he has been somewhat involved in the pass game.
And they've been in negative game script, I think, every game since he came. The Steelers game, they were ahead. But, like, they were down in Indy. They were down in Buffalo. And he's still come through. He's 8,500 next week. I think that's fair. That's pretty much what I'd say with him. He's a volume-based play, but that can work in DFS. Let's move on here to the 49ers at the Buccaneers, Brandon. Nick Mullins came back to earth, but I think it makes sense with Marquise Goodwin being out for this game. And Jameis Winston back in the driver's seat. What did you see from him there?
Yeah, Jameis did well to sort of justify the swap back to him as the Bucs starter. I don't really think they had much of a choice anyway, but he threw 38 times for 312 yards, two touchdowns. He has 0.13 passing net expected points per dropback, just in line with league average of 0.12. 53.7% success rate, just above league average of about 51%, 8.4 yards per attempt, above league average of 7.5. But in the past two games, he has had 0.67 passing net expected points per dropback, a 65.5% success rate, and 9.46 yards per attempt. That's pretty great. He also ran seven times for 24 yards in this game, five times last week for 16 yards. So he's been very efficient, or at least league average efficiency. He's been running the ball. So I think the arrow is pointing up on Winston. Problematically, though, there's just no real go-to target, even with Mike Evans in this offense. The top target getters in the past two games from Jameis Winston are DeSean Jackson and Mike Evans with 11. So that works out to be 20.3% of the targets from Winston. Adam Humphries has 10, 18.5%. Chris Godwin and Cameron Brate, 6 apiece, which is just over 11%. Of course, Mike Evans has 192 yards and a touchdown. Crazy 17.5 yards per target from Winston over the two-game sample. Adam Humphries has 2 touchdowns. The deep targets are primarily going to DeSean Jackson, who has 4 but no catches, and Mike Evans, who has 3, of which he caught 2 for 83 yards and a touchdown. The red zone usage, though, is very dispersed. Evans, Humphries, Brate, Barber, Peyton Barber, that is, each have 1. We just have to keep prioritizing Mike Evans. Maybe keep an eye on DeSean Jackson because he's been getting deep looks without converting. But, it might be naked Jameis Winston for me moving forward if I can't afford Mike Evans.
I think if you're going Peyton Barber, naked Jameis is the way to go for sure.
Yeah. And I'm not above stacking in cash games. Peyton Barber here. Sorry, I guess I should clarify. I'm not compelled to stack Jameis Winston in cash games, but I will stack other quarterbacks with their more. Yeah, wanted to clarify. Yep. Peyton Barber, just not shown enough. He played 49.3% of the snaps, just besting Jaquizz Rodgers at 47%. Just 2 extra snaps for Barber compared to Rodgers. Did have 18 of the 23 running back carries, but he's been pretty inefficient. 36% rushing success rate, below league average, 3.86 yards per carry. But they do play in a game next week with a 56-point total when they host the Panthers. So going to have to reconsider. Yeah. The 49ers played this one without Marquise Goodwin and Pierre Garçon. They lost safety Jimmy Ward to a broken arm. It's not the most significant injury, but it's not insignificant. So, you know, I figured I'd throw it in here. Nick Mullins, you alluded to, was kind of back to earth. It was kind of bad, but not like terrible, at least better than some of the quarterbacks we've seen for the 49ers over the past few years. He was 18 of 32 for 221 yards, so 6.9 yards per attempt, had a touchdown and two picks, threw deep eight times, and he's averaged 7.88 yards per attempt to start his career. And he just keeps feeding George Kittle. He had 12 targets this week, just six catches for 48 yards, but the 12 targets, very promising. Dante Pettis, again, no Marquise Goodwin, Pierre Garçon, of course. He had seven targets, four catches, 77 yards, and a score. Then Matt Breida with four targets, where the he was third on the team in targets. In three games with Nick Mullins under center, George Kittle has a 30.6% target share, so 8.7 targets per game for him. Dante Pettis, 6.5 targets per game in his two games in that span. Kendrick Bourne, just four targets per game in his three full games with Nick Mullins. You know, it's possible that Goodwin and Garçon return for week 13, and that would still keep me on Kittle, but probably step away from the actual receivers just entirely, unless I'm taking a stab on Marquise Goodwin, who missed with a personal reason rather than an injury. In the backfield here, Matt Breida, he played just 48% of the snaps after 60% in week 10. In addition to his four targets, he had 14 of 21 running back carries, and Jeffrey Wilson, depending on where you look.
Oh, that Jeff Wilson. Okay, cool.
Yeah, I don't know. I don't know if he prefers Jeff or Jeffrey. I know he's a loyal listener, but he's a rookie from North Texas. He had the other seven carries, and he played 39.1% of the snaps. So he had 25 snaps compared to 31 for Breida. So it's a bit too close for my liking. I'll still play Breida if the price is low. But they do play at Seattle in week 10 or week 13 as 10-point underdogs with a pretty middling total of about 46, 47 points to open.
So Seahawks defense there. I want to talk about Cameron Brate. This is the first game we've seen him without O.J. Howard. You mentioned that he did wind up. He's got six targets from Jameis in the past two games. He had four in this one, played about 70% of the snaps. With that type of usage, he's $4,900 next week. Do you think that's still low enough to keep you in on him?
I guess. I kind of overlooked him because I just...
I mean, his usage isn't great.
Yeah.
It's okay to overlook him.
I mean, I guess at $4,900... So, yeah, I'll put it this way. Because he's still only $4,900, I expected him to be, $5,400 or whatever because he was highly owned. So, I just... wrote him off, but at 4,900, he's still in play in that total.
Yeah, I think if it were higher, I'd be out.
Yeah,
but tight end, I assume he was. Fire. So
he's the same price as Robert Tonyan. So
oh, good with his one target or whatever that long touchdown he had last week. Good, Brate, he's fine. He's not a great tournament play because he doesn't. He's probably not going to get 50 yards, but he's a good bet for a touchdown. So that's kind of where I'm at with him. Very committal take there. The Eagles moving on as they face the Giants. Nice little comeback win here for the Eagles. Just a weird game plan for the Giants. Starting on the Eagles side here, they said they were going to get Josh Adams more involved, and they were true to their word. Adams finished with 22 carries and one target. That was even while missing some time early while he was in the injury tent. I think he missed the entire second series. And despite that, he played 62% of the snaps, which means it could have been, maybe somewhere near 70% if he hadn't been hurt. The lack of the passing game work is disappointing, but he did get six targets last week, so it is at least in his range of outcomes. And the rushing work appears to be robust. I am in on Josh Adams and his increased usage, so totally fine with him personally. Zach Ertz had 8 of 28 targets and finished with 91 yards and a touchdown. Seems like he's back to being trustworthy at tight end, but everybody else is just a mess. Golden Tate had 8 targets, resulting in just 30 yards. Dallas Goedert had 4. Alshon Jeffrey had 3. And nobody else had more than 2. For the full season, Carson Wentz has negative 1.6 net expected points when targeting Golden Tate. That is easily the worst among the wide receivers. I can't expect Tate to keep getting volume if it's not working, kind of like Jarvis Landry. So I can't trust Tate, but I also can't trust Alshon Jeffrey with his usage in the tube. So when targeting this passing offense, it is likely just Ertz until something changes. The Giants had some injury weirdness before the game with Evan Engram injuring his hamstring. He did not play. That said, he played just 32% of the snaps last week, so even when he's back, he should not be targeted in DFS right now. With Engram out, targets were pretty concentrated here. Odell Beckham led with 9 targets. 4 of those were deep, 1 in the red zone. He was fine. He had 85 yards, just didn't quite come all the way through. He's a pretty good example of why we should pay up at running back over wide receiver. Even in what was a decent game for Beckham, he got easily outscored by Melvin Gordon, who played just a half. That's not easy. It's not to say we should always forego high-priced receivers, but if it comes at the expense of a high-priced back, you should go with the back more often than not. Saquon Barkley kind of showed why that's the case. He had 8 targets, putting his target share up to 22%. He had 2 more red zone targets and converted one of them into a touchdown for the second straight week. Didn't play a ton in the second half, so it's possible he got a bit banged up. He played just 77% of the snaps, his fewest since week 6. So I wouldn't be shocked if Barkley sits out some practice this week, but as long as he's not truly hurt, he still has a great floor and a massive ceiling. With Evan Engram out, Rhett Ellison had 6 targets. 3 of those were downfield. That kind of sucked the air out of Sterling Shepard, who had just 6 targets as well. Shepard was good earlier in the year when Engram was missing, but he didn't do much here against a banged-up secondary. When Shepard does go off, it likely won't be super predictable. That can work in tournaments, but isn't very desirable. So I kind of think I'm narrowing this one just down to Barkley and to Beckham. Unless Engram misses time, maybe I would consider Rhett Ellison, I guess. But, you know, it's kind of not a situation I really want to go to here. Brandon, we saw Josh Adams get 22 carries and 1 target in this game. I think that's pretty solid usage. Where do you sit on Josh Adams based on what we've seen from the past couple of games?
Yeah, it's paired with just a talk that they want to get him more involved and feature him. So that helps a lot, helps us buy in. I guess if I had to throw a price on him, I think he's still kind of in like what I consider the Marlon Mack range. Yes, of about 7,000.
Exact name I was thinking.
About 7,000 or so, I think, is fair. If he's below that, that's great. But I can't really pay more than 7,000 for Josh Adams in what's been a pretty rough offense overall.
Yep. 7,000 for a guy who is going to get a lot of carries and limited work in the passing game is appropriate. So he's not on the full slate or the main slate next week, but they're at, I believe, at home against Washington. So if you're playing Thursday to Monday, he would be in play in that scenario. Let's move on here to the Raiders and the Ravens. Brandon, Lamar Jackson threw a bit more in this game. Didn't have a ton of success as a passer. What'd you see from him this week against the Raiders?
Yeah, he certainly didn't come through as a passer against the league's 32nd ranked adjusted pass defense based on number fires metrics, but he did come through in the rushing department again. Jackson was 14 of 25 passing for 178 yards with a touchdown and 2 picks. 74 yards, though, came on a single throw to Mark Andrews. No other receiver accounted for more than 25 yards. That's problematic for me. He still had 11 carries for 71 yards and a touchdown, which is great to see from a quarterback. But if you look primarily at the second half, he had 9 carries for 60 yards in that touchdown, and he threw just 7 times for 38 yards and a touchdown. So maybe that's a bit more telling of what we should expect moving forward, just keeping the passing volume even lower. And running the ball even more with Jackson. But, you know, problematically, we may not be able to predict the few targets that there are to be had from Jackson. Last week, Willie Snead led with 8 targets, but he had 0 targets in week 12, despite a 71% snap rate and a route on a 20 of 26 dropbacks, according to Pro Football Focus. John Brown had 1 catch last week and this week, but the difference was that he had 1 target last week and 7 this week. Michael Crabtree had 6 targets in week 12 after 3 the week before. Overall, Crabtree leads with 21.4% of Jackson's targets, just 4.5 per game in those two games. Brown and Snead are at 19%, four targets per game, but of course, very unevenly distributed between those two games. And you know, this week, nobody surpassed the 71% snap rate. All three were between 64% and 71%. You know, I just don't think we can really pair Lamar Jackson with any pass catcher. In the backfield here, Gus Edwards had 23 carries for 118 yards and no touchdowns, no catches. Played 61% of the snaps after 67% last week. Of course, Alex Collins missed this one, so the snap rate didn't even go up, but it was still a firm majority of the snaps at a reasonable price when he's attached to a rushing quarterback to open up some running lanes. They play at the Falcons in week 13, so they're in a dome on turf, but the best way to attack this defense, of course, is just sort of throwing the ball to running backs, and that's not something that we've seen from Gus Edwards just yet. Oakland, I mean, they're just kind of a lost cause in fantasy, really. It was a very tough matchup, but Derek Carr, who did get banged up multiple times in this game, says he's fine for next week. He surpassed 15.7 fantasy points just twice all season. Since their week 7 bye, so 5 full games, no receiver has had more than 54 yards in a game or 11.4 fantasy points in a game. Jordy Nelson played in this one. He played a team high 89.7% of snaps. Marcel Aitman played 81% of the snaps. Seth Roberts, 67%. Aitman did get 10 targets, but caught 3 and had 16 yards. Doug Martin in the backfield here, I mean, he had a rushing score, the first rushing score by a Raiders running back since week 3. He played 48% of the snaps. Jalen Richard played 45%. Can't really look here if we're being realistic. And they host the Chiefs next week. We're coming off a bye. I guess it'd be Jalen Richard if I had to. Maybe Marcel Aitman for the heavy targets that he's been getting. But that's really all I got for the Raiders.
Yeah, that's okay. We can forget about them. next week, you mentioned Lamar Jackson playing on turf, but interesting spot here against Atlanta. I would assume Deion Jones is back for that game. He's been practicing for a bit now and has extra time to prepare here. Where do you sit on Lamar Jackson from a pricing perspective on the road against Atlanta?
With the minimal passing that he's shown, especially in a spot as good as what he had this prior week, I couldn't really go more than like $7,500 for him.
He's 75, so I think
kind of what I figured. Yeah,
well, I think I'd still pay that honestly because if he just happens to run into a passing touchdown again, like he had 22 points, and I think the ceiling is higher than that. So like, I still like him a pretty good amount at that price. The problem is, like you said, you can't pair him with anybody. I don't think I like Gus Edwards in this matchup because Atlanta can very easily win this game. They're a decent team, and Edwards doesn't get passing down work. We saw Ty Montgomery get involved there. So, Gus Edwards is 64. Is that too expensive for a guy playing his role?
I want to say yes. It's 13 games on the main slate. We just talked about paying up for a running back. We're going to talk about that probably on Thursday as well. I don't really want to play someone who's going to play 60% of the snaps and not really have much of a receiving role.
Chris Carson. What? Sorry?
Yeah, pretty much. So I think that I'm just kind of Jackson here. And I'll pay the $7,500. I just wish I saw more promise from the past game.
Sure.
That's from him. But it's also possible that they just try to limit him to, you know, fewer than 20 that we saw in week 11 and just run him even more so that, you know, arrows pointing up in that sense.
And that could lead to a low scoring game. So that would probably lower the outlook on Atlanta's offense in that one as well. Moving on to Patriots at Jets. Patriots got Sony Michel and Rob Gronkowski back, and both guys made an impact here. Michel had 21 carries for 133 yards and a touchdown. That was even while leaving the game for a bit due to a back injury. That held the snap rate down to 43%, but again, part of that's influenced by injury. He had just two targets. That's in line with his usual expectation. He is playing the LeGarrette Blount role, except with a bit more yardage upside because he's better than LeGarrette Blount. And that is rock solid for fantasy. So I do like Michelle, even though I don't usually use guys at his snap rate very often. For Gronk, it was 7 targets. 3 of those were deep. 3 of those were in the red zone, finally getting high leverage looks. He scored a touchdown on a pass over the middle of the field. And they don't always do that with Gronk. They can be pretty conservative with him to avoid injuries. They didn't do that in this one, at least on that play. He also played 69 of 70 snaps, while price is $6,900 on FanDuel, so Gronk is back. After Gronk, things were pretty spread out. Nobody else had more than 5 targets. Julian Edelman, Josh Gordon, and James White all had exactly 5. In the 3 games that Gronk has played since Gordon's snap rate went up, White has 24% of the targets, but 13 of those came in a game that Michelle missed. He hasn't done much in the 2 games since Michelle came back, so I'm pretty down on James White. Edelman is 2nd on the team in targets in those 3 games at 21%. Gordon is at 19%, and Gronk is at 18%. There's upside in this offense, so it's worthwhile to take stabs in tournaments, but nobody's really cash game viable with everybody healthy. If I had to rank them for tournaments, I'd go Gronk 1, followed by Edelman, and then Gordon 3. I'm pretty much out on James White, so I think that's the way I'd put them, and I think Gordon is a decent amount behind Edelman and Gronk based on the usage Gordon has had in those 3 games. On the Jets side, Josh McCown played like Josh McCown. He had negative 2.04 net expected points on 45 attempts. His success rate was 38%. Sam Darnold has not been great this year, but he will still be an upgrade for the offense when he returns because he finally has health around him, which he did not have when he was really struggling. The backfield was still a committee. Isaiah Crowell and Elijah McGuire both had 6 carries. Crowell had 4 targets. McGuire had 3. You should not be using either of those guys in DFS. At wide receiver, Jermaine Kearse finally had a day, but it was with both Quincy Enunwa and Robbie Anderson active, of course. Kearse had 12 targets, while Anderson had 5. Enunwa had 4. Kearse did get 3 deep targets, his most since week 4, and that was before the other 2 got hurt. So maybe he benefits from having them healthy. But overall, when all 3 guys are healthy, it may just be hard to predict who will go off in a given week. The offense is trending up in general, but it's just hard to know who will benefit most. Because tight end is bad, it's worth noting that Chris Herndon had 8 targets in this game. He also played a season-high 80% of the snaps. In the 3 games since Neil Sterling got hurt, Herndon had he has 15% of the team's targets. He gets some deep looks. Darnold liked him in the red zone when he was healthy, so I think that Herndon is at least on the radar if you think they'll move the ball, which they could do if Darnold is back for next week against Tennessee. So not totally off of Chris Herndon by any means.
Just know that he's 5,600.
Okay, I'm off of Chris Herndon. Let's talk about the Patriots, Brandon. I rank them Gronk, Edelman, Gordon for tournaments. What's your ranking of those 3 guys, focusing just on tourneys, and can you use any of them in cash?
Not really in cash. Oh, well, that's a lie. I can use Edelman in cash, but not Gronk or Gordon, and I would rank them the same as you because Edelman's been pretty involved in the red zone near the goal line as well.
He's gotten some like decent deep looks too.
Yeah.
So like I think that I have a pretty big gap in my mind between Edelman and Gordon now that Gronk is back. When Gronk was out, I was pretty good with Josh Gordon. I used him a lot. But now that Gronk is back, I think that it does hurt Gordon quite a bit. Do you have the same view there?
Yeah, that's definitely the case for me because Gordon more of the field stretcher, which, you know, Gronkowski weirdly is as a tight end, and Edelman is not really going to be as impacted by Rob Gronkowski. If anything, it's just going to benefit him, take some attention away from him, open up more space over the middle. So yeah, I'm a bit down on Josh Gordon, but I will still use him because his upside and talent is just crazy.
Yeah, exactly. Let's move on here to the Cardinals and the Chargers. Brandon, Melvin Gordon, probably going to miss a couple of games here with a sprained MCL. I personally am just happy it's not worse because he probably should not have been playing in this game. So at least he's okay long term. What did you see overall in this game?
Yeah, definitely a Pyrrhic victory, 45-10. Cardinals actually got out to a 10-point lead and then they just got stomped after that. Gordon played 27 snaps, which is actually 39.1%. So, you know, we don't have too much of a sample to look at with how the backs fared after Gordon exited. But, you know, after the injury, Austin Ekeler had 3 carries, 24 yards and a touchdown, as well as 5 catches and 32 yards receiving. Played 36.2% of the snaps overall, had 11 targets, very, very noteworthy. Justin Jackson, who I know is your boy, he had 7 carries for 57 yards, played just 13 snaps, so you know, a good usage rate, but still below 20% of the snaps overall. And we've seen Austin Ekeler play 95.5% of the snaps in Gordon's only other missed game. So,
and Jackson was off the practice squad by that point too, so he was active for that game, and Ekeler still had a really good usage.
Yeah, so that's definitely something to keep in mind. This game was just a blowout, so obviously we have to prioritize Ekeler between the two. Philip Rivers is he's a deity, basically. 28 of 29 for 259 yards and 3 touchdowns, has multiple passing touchdowns in every single game this year. After Ekeler and his 11 targets, it was Keenan Allen who was second on the team with 7 targets, making him the only other Charger with more than 4 targets, which is kind of the norm for this team. It's more or less Keenan Allen, or, you know, just a roll of the dice on who's going to get targets. Even with Tyrell Williams limited to 9 snaps in this game, just nobody really stepped up other than, I guess, Austin Ekeler, if you want to make that case. Since a week 8 bye, Keenan Allen has a 30.4% target share, 32% of the red zone looks. Doesn't get all the deep looks by any means, because they have some deep threats, but still has 30% of the deep targets in that span. He's really the only viable pass catcher here based on predictability. Again, even with Tyrell Williams, very limited in this one. The Chargers are at the Steelers in week 13. That's the Sunday night game. So they're not on the main slate, so we don't have to try to predict the Austin Ekeler, Justin Jackson backfield too much unless we're playing on an extended slate. The Cardinals are, I don't know. I mean, I want to like Josh Rosen, but just hasn't really been there yet this year. They possess the ball for fewer than 25 minutes. Josh Rosen, even though they got blown out, was limited to 19 attempts and 105 passing yards. The Cardinals have averaged a league worst 4.3 yards per play, which is like a,
not per carry, per no, play.
Per play. Passing factored in. They've also run the fewest plays in the league, even with the Titans and Texans still at play. So, fewest yards per play and fewest plays, not a good recipe for DFS.
Like, Josh Rosen has looked good, but like, it doesn't matter for this year. Just write him off for this year, circle back in 2019 and go at him then, if they improve his offensive line, which they
absolutely make. Yeah. The target leaders here, Christian Kirk had 6. He had 4 catches for 41 yards. David Johnson had 3, 2 catches, 16 yards. Larry Fitzgerald had 2 targets, caught both for 30 yards and a touchdown. And then Ricky Seals-Jones had 2, just 1 catch for 5 yards. In 4 games under Byron Leftwich, Larry Fitzgerald has 25.9% of the targets, which works out to 7 per game. He has scored 5 times in his past 5 games, but that has hidden some, it's just really masked some bad yardage outputs. He has had 40 yards, 102 yards, 50 yards, 23, and 30 yards. So he's just waiting to bust, and I need to make a note not to play Larry Fitzgerald in DFS moving forward. Christian Kirk has 21.3% target share, which is 5.8 per game. David Johnson is at 17.6%, so 4.8 targets per game. Johnson played 37 snaps, about 79% of them. Moved out of the backfield for just one of those when he lined up out wide. He had 17 carries for 63 yards. It's basically just the same old thing with David Johnson here. Great market share, just no offensive talent to help him move the ball or score. So we just have to keep that in mind. And they play at the Packers in week 13.
Let's talk about the Chargers passing offense here, because I think we both agree Austin Ekeler is primed for a huge workload next week. But Keenan Allen, we haven't really seen him with this increased usage. He had like an argument with the coaching staff before their bye week, and since then he's had really good usage. We just haven't seen them throw the ball very often since then. Next week in Pittsburgh, they're probably going to have to throw. Like, how high can we be on this passing offense in a spot where they actually need to try, essentially?
Pretty high, frankly. I mean, Phillip Rivers has just been fantastic this year. They're going to be top five in adjusted passing offense once our number fire metrics update after the Monday night game. It's really just it's the problem where it's kind of like Phillip Rivers and Keenan Allen, or just Phillip Rivers, and you kind of can't look anywhere else. Would have been Melvin Gordon potentially, because he's been their sort of de facto wide receiver too.
Right.
So now, I mean, I guess you can assume it's Eckler, but overall, to answer your question on the pass offense, I'm pretty high moving forward.
Yeah, I think you can stack Eckler with Rivers, because Eckler had 11 targets on Sunday, and I think five of them were in the first half, if I recall correctly. So even when Melvin was healthy, he was still getting work in the passing game. So I think Eckler's a viable stacking partner with Rivers for next week. Let's talk about their opponent next week, the Steelers, who lost on the road against the Broncos. And Ben Roethlisberger chucked it 56 times in this one, led to big volume for Juju Smith-Schuster, also had interesting usage in this game. Juju finished with 17 targets, easily his most since he had 19 targets back in week two, which I had forgotten about. That brings his target share for the full season up to 24%. He has 30% of the deep targets and 38% of the red zone targets. And interestingly, Juju lined up outside quite a bit in this game. He had 47 snaps on the outside compared to 19 in the slot, according to Pro Football Focus. He had not lined up outside more than 31 snaps all season, but those 31 snaps came last week. He has set season highs in outside snap rate in consecutive games. It could be matchup related to get away from Chris Harris, take advantage of Tremaine Brock, who got hurt in the third quarter trying to tackle Juju, but that doesn't explain why the outside rate was up last week. I think we know that Juju can have down games, especially when they get a lead, but the ceiling is clearly still there in neutral game scripts, and it seems like they're trying to get him into good matchups, and I am fully in favor of that, so Juju trending up in my eyes. Antonio Brown had 13 targets, but he turned it into just 67 yards. He was dealing with some coverage from Chris Harris for a good chunk of the day, but that can drag things down. But still, the yardage upside has been down most of the year. His max output is 117 yards in week 11, and he has topped 100 yards just three total times. Antonio Brown has had fewer than 70 yards five times. Brandon has mentioned this a couple of times this year, but Antonio Brown's usage just isn't what it has been in years past because Juju is good. He is still viable, but I don't think he is worth the 9,000 he was in the past, basically. If they're getting big volume with the Steelers throwing 58 times, it has to come at the expense of someone, and that was James Conner again. He had just 13 carries and four targets. The four targets tied his fewest in a full game this season. His target market share is now down to 14%, and he has just 12% of the red zone targets. I think that Connor's ceiling is on par with the top running backs in the game, but his floor is a pretty good chunk lower than theirs. He is, I would say, close. He's kind of in that Alvin Kamara tier. Low floor, very high ceiling. Vance McDonald injured his hip and had to leave early. He still had five targets in the game. If he can't go, Ryan Switzer had eight targets in the game. He could get a bump in usage going forward, and Switzer's snap rate was easily a season high at 67% here. So Switzer would be the name to monitor if Vance misses time. Philip Lindsay continued to flash efficiency, and it seems like that may be allowing him to pull away from Royce Freeman. Lindsay had 14 carries compared to six for Freeman, but Lindsay didn't have any targets. Lindsay played 63% of the snaps. That is his first time this year topping 60%, and it came with Freeman active. For the full season, Lindsay has a 51% rushing success rate, which is among the best in football. Freeman is at 39%. We can't feel great about Lindsay's floor until he gets more targets, but he has gotten those in the past. He was good in the passing game in college, so a workhorse-esque workload is in his range of outcomes. He is very much trending up with Freeman's role shrinking. At wide receiver was just the Manny Sanders show. He had 12 targets. Nobody else had more than four. Sanders had four of six deep targets. He had five of six in the red zone. He had the better matchup between he and Cortland Sutton, but since the Demaryius Thomas trade, Manny has 28% of the team's targets. Sutton has 15%. Manny is probably a worthwhile buy when he's not in terrible matchups, and Sutton is really nothing more at this point than a GPP dart. I think that that's kind of just the way you have to view him at this point. But Brandon, next week, Denver on the road against Cincinnati, who has been atrocious. What is the price for you on Philip Lindsay, a guy I think you've been more quick to buy into this year than I have, but I'm coming around. So where do you set on him next week at Cincinnati from a pricing perspective?
$15,000.
I'm going to go out on a limb and say he is cheaper than that.
Just yeah.
Risking it all here.
I honestly would pay close to about 75 for him. He's certainly not like a full-on workhorse. He's still going to lose some touches, especially some short yardage and goal line touches to Royce Freeman. But yeah, I think I could go up to 75 for him.
He is 7,000. So that is
that.
Your wheelhouse. I could do that as well because he is hyper-efficient. Their defense sucks. Joe Mixon or Philip Lindsay?
Probably Mixon. That's tough. If AJ Green's back, Mixon. If not, Lindsay. I'll cop out like that.
I think that's a fair way to put it. Mixon is $7,400 next week against a bad rush defense. So I think that's pretty okay by me. Any thoughts from you on the Steelers before we move on?
I was gonna chime in. So I do this thing where I just kind of combine red zone targets and deep targets because they're just high leverage looks relative to just a short yard, like a short target. And you know, combined, Juju Smith-Schuster has a third of Pittsburgh's combined, you know, high leverage looks. So 33.3%. That ranks him seventh in the league in terms of just like that high leverage market share. Antonio Brown's at 34%. So you mentioned that, I mentioned that, you know, Antonio Brown just doesn't have that same workload. But yeah, I mean, it's pretty close. So of course, Juju's getting more of the red zone looks rather than the deep looks, which is still where, you know, Brown makes his hay. But I mean,
but he's getting deep looks too. It's not like he's getting none. You're right.
Yeah, Juju's still at 30% of the team's deep looks.
It's pretty fun.
Yeah.
I'm worried about Antonio Brown, but I'm not worried about Juju anymore, especially in a game next week against a really good opponent. That is the time to use Juju, essentially. Let's move on here to the Dolphins and the Colts. Really weird game here, Brandon, where the Dolphins got out front. Marlon Mack left with a concussion, which really did not help. Hopefully he's okay, because that obviously matters more. But just a weird game all around. Kenyon Drake looked like he had broken his arm and came back in. I don't know what to do with this game. This is a weird game to me.
Yeah, this was just certainly a strange one. You know, Andrew Luck got his three touchdowns. The Colts won a fifth straight game. Luck's just been good. He's been efficient. He was 30 of 37 in this one for 343 yards. And again, those three touchdowns. Not good on deep throws. 2 for 7, 2 picks on those. But still, overall, a good game for Andrew Luck. If you exclude Luck, who got a target, there were 9 total Colts who were targeted, which is more than we like to see in DFS. But he still fed T.Y. Hilton 10 targets. Hilton had 7 catches and 125 yards, but no touchdowns. Since his return in week 7, Hilton has a team-high 23.2% target share, 7 per game. Nobody else is above Dontrell Inman's 5.3 per game in that split. So Hilton clearly the best bet to lead the team in targets each week. The only other Colt with more than 4 targets, of course, was Eric Ebron, who had 7 targets. He caught 5 of them for 45 yards and 2 touchdowns. But more importantly, Eric Ebron's snap rate shot back up to 71% after being 40.3%, 38.2%, and 21.8% in the 3 prior games. The reason for that is because Mo Ali Cox had been ruled out here, and I mean, he had a calf injury, so maybe that lingers. But it's a strange situation where, you know, Eric Ebron's snaps are so dependent on, you know, a second string tight end, but that's kind of what we have to assume is the case. So if Mo Ali Cox is out, I can buy into Ebron, but if not, he's going to be a very, very, very low snap rate guy who could just bust, which is the case for all tight ends anyway. But Jack Doyle, another tight end here, had 4 targets, same as Dontrell Inman and Chester Rogers in this one. Doyle caught the other touchdown here. I'm still higher on Doyle just overall if Mo Ali Cox is back, because he's going to play the majority of snaps. Marlon Mack, you mentioned, had a concussion, played 52% of the snaps in a, you know, I guess overall you could consider it a neutral script. Certainly wasn't a blowout win for the Colts. Mac had 15 of 24 running back carries for 85 yards. Nyheim Hines had the other nine carries for 28 yards. And Hines did get to out carry Mac 3-1 in the red zone. So, I mean, we have to, of course, keep an eye on Mac's status, but it sounds like Nyheim Hines would be the guy that they turn to again rather than Jordan Wilkins. So we can keep an eye on that situation. They play Hines at Jet.
He's $4,900 next week. So if Mac can't go, he would be a free square.
Well, yeah. Do we play Nyheim Hines at $4,900, or do we force ourselves to pay up at running back?
Yes. Both. Use Nyheim Hines so you can pay up at other running back spots.
I can get on board with that. Right. If I, you know, treat him sort of as the flex, the free space there, and get two studs in there. But yeah, at Jacksonville next week, the Colts opened up as a 3-point favorite. So that's going to be a game that we're probably going to have to dig into again come Thursday. For the Dolphins, Ryan Tannehill returned here, helped Miami keep it close. He was 15 of 25 for 204 yards and two touchdowns. He ran three times for 14 yards. Tannehill usually has some rushing upside and some floor to his game, so it's a good sign for his health that he's running or ran in this game. Problematically, though, his 25 attempts were aimed at 9 different receivers, and 9 receivers and 25 attempts doesn't really mesh for DFS. Kenyon Drake led with 6 targets. He had 5 catches for 64 yards and a touchdown. To lead the team in targets. Then it was Kenny Stills with 4. He had just 1 catch and 6 yards, even though only one of those targets was deep. Then Devontae Parker had 3 targets, caught all 3 for 10 yards. So that's just a mess. It's hard to filter through the market shares, really, because this team's been injured at quarterback and receiver. But we do know that Kenyon Drake has a team-high 20.5% of the targets from Ryan Tannehill this year. Also, we know that Kenny Stills plays a lot of snaps when he's fully healthy. That's what he did this week. He played 96% in week 12. No other wide receiver topped 46%. They dispersed the snaps between Parker at 45, Leonte Carew and Bryce Butler at 42, and Danny Amendola at 26. Amendola did get hurt early on, but I'm not touching any of these receivers anyway, other than potentially Kenny Stills.
How many times has Bryce Butler played for this year? Played for the Cardinals, Cowboys. Now he's on the Dolphins. Has he been in like 6 other spots that I don't know about?
It's possible. I think he liked one of my tweets once.
He did. I remember that.
So, yeah, I'm not going to play anyone other than Kenny Stills here, regardless of Danny Amendola's health. Drake, you mentioned he hurt his shoulder, but seemed like
he might have broken his arm.
Yeah, that's what it sounded like or looked like. But I guess it was a shoulder injury. Could miss next week's game against the Bills, but I'm not playing Frank Gore either way. I just can't do it.
Nope. Let's talk about the Colts here. They've been stupid good. Next week, though, they're going outside, facing the Jaguars. Second time these two teams have faced each other in a couple of weeks. Has luck been good enough where you overlook the negatives surrounding that situation?
I think so. I love pass efficiency, but eventually it's not going to be there. And that's always worrisome, but it's We know that Andrew Luck can throw 55 times if they need him to. And, right. Over the past half of the season, if you kind of just cut the season in half, Jacksonville has been a middling pass defense. So I'm not overly concerned there.
Yeah, they've quit.
Sorry about you.
Because they've quit, you can use Andrew Luck. I don't think he's a cash game play, and he's not going to be my favorite tournament play, but you can use him. He's really good. And his offensive line is good. Even with Ryan Kelly, their center out, Mac was still efficient before he left. So this is still a really good team, even with Ryan Kelly out. So I think they're matchup proof. I think going outdoors is potentially the bigger concern for me, but they're in play there. That's what I would say. I don't think you have to prioritize them, but they're very much in play. Let's finish up here. The Packers at the Vikings. The Vikings won this game. And once again, it looks like that defense in Minnesota is the biggest storyline. They held Aaron Rodgers to 198 yards. They sacked him 4 times. Part of that was with David Bakhtiari coming in and out of the game. But I think this defense is legit once again, and one we need to consider and lower quarterbacks facing them. That could change as Xavier Rhodes misses time. He is getting an MRI on his hamstring today, but this defensive front is really good. So quarterbacks facing them are not good plays for DFS. They're facing Tom Brady next week, so we'll get a test of that. But they're hard to target right now. Offensively, Kirk Cousins was sharp, and it allowed Adam Thielen and Stephon Diggs to beast out. Both guys had a touchdown, and they both had 9 or more targets. Nobody else on the team had more than 7. We know Thielen's value, but Diggs now has double-digit targets in his past 4 games he has played. Is up to a 27% market share overall. When you exclude the game he missed, Thielen is at 29% in those games. On deep balls, it is 41% Diggs and 40% Thielen. In the red zone, 29% Thielen compared to 24% Diggs. So looking at these two guys, Thielen has a slight edge. But Diggs is a monster whenever he is not in a tough matchup. So I love both these guys. I think that Stephon Diggs may actually be a bit underrated based on some struggles he has had in tough matchups and earlier in the year. Kyle Rudolph had 7 targets that tied the most he has had since week 2. He actually has 4 deep targets the past 5 games. He's still not someone I want to use at his price, but it's at least better than it was. That's as far as I can go with Kyle Rudolph. Dalvin Cook has had time to recover from his hamstring injury, but he's still not playing that great of a role. He finished the night with 10 carries and 3 targets. Latavius Murray actually had 11 carries. He played just 59% of the snaps there, while Murray was at 40%. That would have been the script to get Cook more involved, and they didn't. Cook played 88% of the snaps last week. So this is a step backward. He has not had more than 10 carries since week 1. I'm probably out on Cook until I see that usage start to creep back up. He's looked good, especially, you know, he had that long receiving touchdown last night, but it's hard to use a guy at that usage. The Packers were trying to come from behind pretty much the entire second half, but Aaron Jones' usage was still steady. He had 17 of 18 running back carries to go with 5 targets. Jones also played 76% of the snaps. Jones has 4 or more targets in 4 straight games. He has a 16% market share since his role shot up. He is a workhorse going forward. Devontae Adams was the only Packer to get more than 8 targets while facing Xavier Rhodes prior to Rhodes' injury. Adams is at 28% of their overall targets, 36% of the deep targets, and 44% of the red zone targets. Their schedule does lighten up going forward. I think he's facing Patrick Peterson next week. Peterson has been shadowing more often recently, but he's kind of matchup proof. I wouldn't go out of my way to use him against Patrick Peterson in projected positive game script, but I'm not going to write him off. Behind Adams, Jimmy Graham had 5 targets. 3 of those were deep, but with his injured thumb and how limited his role was even before that, I'm not super tempted to use him. Kind of looks like Equanimeous St. Brown may have inched ahead of Marquez Valdez-Scantling a bit. St. Brown had 5 targets in this one compared to just 2 for Valdez-Scantling. That was while playing one less snap. Over the past 2 games, St. Brown has 9 targets while Valdez-Scantling has 5. 5 of St. Brown's targets have been deep too. So if I'm going here, I'm going with St. Brown, but neither guy has a reliable floor with their volume. So if you want to avoid Patrick Peterson next week and target this passing game, I would go St. Brown. But Brandon, I think the big guy in that game is Aaron Jones. Aaron Jones at home against a Cardinals rush defense that has been pretty poor this year. What price are you paying for Aaron Jones?
Before I ruin it, let me have you guess the spread in that game.
Packers have been pretty bad, honestly. So like 12?
14 to 14 and a half.
Is it weird to think that's too high?
No, but I mean, it's all in on Aaron Jones. That's going to be such an ugly game.
Yeah.
For Jones, I don't think he'd be up at around 8,000 yet, but I would probably pay about 78 for him.
76.
Okay, I've been a little high on all these.
I think that I'm in line with you, though, where 78 is probably appropriate. Who was it we said 8,000 for before? I'm trying to figure out. We said 8,000 for Chubb, was it?
Maybe.
Yeah, I think. All right.
Would someone remembers Chubb in their, Jones. Jones. In this game, for sure.
Better offense.
Jones or David Johnson in that same game?
Jones.
Yeah.
Like the touchdown expectations just so much higher.
Poor David.
Poor guy. Rest in peace, man. He had a good run, though.
Yeah.
He's kind of like Rosen, where it's like, I mean, I'm still going to have some David Johnson shares because his workload is high enough where I can, you know, make the volume-based argument. The Packers are trash, so probably more so on the Packers defense there. But, yeah, I think Aaron Jones at 76 is a very intriguing guy. And I think I would also say he doesn't have the same usage as guys like Saquon or McCaffrey in the passing game, but I would still say that Jones is cash game viable at that price. Would you agree?
Yeah, Arizona's been pretty bad against the run.
They allow a lot of big plays, and that guy can generate big plays. So
yep.
I think that he's cash game viable at that price, and I will pay it and feel pretty okay about him for sure. Brandon, that's all we have for this podcast. I think some pretty interesting takeaways, and it's setting up for what is a really fun week 13. I almost said 15. I don't know where that came from. Week 13 slate, trying to push the season out of bounds here. But week 13 slate, where we have everyone back, essentially. Todd Gurley, Kareem Hunt, Christian McCaffrey, Saquon Barkley. It's going to make for a lot of interesting decisions where we have to kind of be picky. And that's interesting. So I'm excited to talk to you again on Thursday. Any final takeaways for you before we close the book on week 12?
Sorry, I'm just looking ahead to this 13-game slate and trying to figure it out. So no more takeaways. Just trying to look ahead now. And there are some blowouts. There are some good games here. So it's going to be a pretty interesting slate to break down.
Yeah. Don't forget to get those iTunes submissions in. Go to iTunes, search for the Number Fire Daily Fantasy Podcast feed. Leave a comment and rate the podcast. We'll draw a week from today for our next Number Fire premium winner for a month-long subscription. We are back at you Thursday to preview the week 13 main slate. As Brandon mentioned, 13 games on that one should be a dandy. You can subscribe to get that podcast right as it is posted on Spotify, iTunes, SoundCloud, Stitcher, the Google Play Store, and the TuneIn app. Brandon, if people have questions for you on Twitter, where can they find you there?
I am at Gdula13, GDULA13.
And I am at Jim Sonnes, JimSannes. You can also follow the Number Fire Podcast Network at Number Fire Pods, PODS as in podcast. Hopefully all of you had a fantastic Thanksgiving weekend and had some safe travels and are as excited as we are for week 13. We'll talk to you on Thursday to preview that. This has been the Heat Check Fantasy Podcast powered by Number Fire.